Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
That is all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Home out, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Dizay from Triumph MMA. Joe is in fresh with 27 pages of notes about UFC 169. Ken is out this week, so we will catch up with him in a little bit. But a big night in the UFC as far as things going well, not the way I think that they, well, anyone really wanted them to go.
More of a long night, right?
Oh, man, it was so long. And
was it recorded as one of the longest UFC cards? I think it was.
It felt like it, if it wasn't.
Yeah, if it didn't make the record, it certainly should be.
I think it did. I heard somewhere that it was recorded as
one of the longest UFC nights. So.
It did break the record for most decisions.
Ten decisions.
Yeah,
ten decisions.
Wouldn't that make sense then, being the longest?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So maybe you should be the stats guy at this point.
Simple math, guys.
We will talk about the main card, but of course, want to talk about the Insiguri heard around the world, Kevin Lee, Ally Quinta. An awesome fight.
I mean,
I think whatever you say about the judging, whatever you say, I don't know that you have seen. And this is not hyperbole. I will say this based in fact. I don't know that you've seen somebody Kevin's age make a debut that was that big of a splash, save for maybe a guy like John Jones.
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you guys, being cage side and being in the corner, like I saw one fight, and then at the end of the night, for those of you that stayed up and watched the end of the pay-per-view, they re-aired his fight after the main event.
That was awesome.
And I, you know, in the locker room, they have the screen, and you watch
sure.
it, and watching it on the screen, I saw a complete different fight.
It's
weird when that happens.
I can only imagine when you're kind of in the heat of battle what it looks
yeah.
like, and then being able to kind of be back a step or two, be like, oh, okay.
Yeah. My overall assessment leaving, I was like, okay, awesome fight. It was very, very close. You know, we were definitely not outclassed. You know what I mean? So we were in it. We were right there. I'm not going to complain with the judges. They actually got it right. You know, I know a lot of people. First of all, I want to thank for all the support and everyone that was behind us. But guys, everyone out there, the judges got it right. You know, it was dead even. That one judge that was giving out 10-8s, he was being consistent about it. He gave, 10-8 for him, 10-8 to us.
Yep.
Going into that third round, it was dead even. The last 45 seconds is where Ally Quinta kind of pushed on the gas pedal a little bit. And, you know, and another fact, guys, the UFC jitters, it is real. It exists. If you're going to, you know, and I spoke to Kevin, you know, the other day. He came over to my house and we had dinner and everything. It was the first time we actually got to sit down, and he watched the fight a few times. I watched the fight a few times, and then we sat down, had dinner, and he said, "Sean, I felt great. I felt good all the way up until we touched gloves, and then it hit me."
Yeah.
He said that's when it hit. He goes, "Oh man, I got to fight now." You know, like right at that moment when they touch gloves, and then, you know, Coach Mitch, right? Mitch says, "Well, don't touch gloves next time." You know what I mean? Like that's like the easiest thing to do. But bro, I mean, he was fine. You know here's another thing I want to point out, guys. The last time I was behind the scenes with UFC was probably in March of 2010, and since the UFC signed with Fox and they've doing this huge global domination,
sure.
you can say, it is a complete different monster. I mean, this is a beast. There was some moments there where I was like in shock and like, wow, I was overwhelmed.
And people who have not been backstage, and I've been fortunate to be that, what I'm describing is when you're back there, you think it's probably going to be dudes in locker rooms, and then like somebody comes in. It is like a nonstop flow of human beings and cameras and cables.
It's
and
nonstop,
dudes
bro.
Yelling
nonstop.
And it's nonstop from the time you get there until the time you leave.
We got there on Tuesday, you know, and Burt Watson, right? For those of you who don't
yep.
know, we rolling that guy, right? He's cool, super cool guy. But as soon as we get there, you know, immediately, I think I was trying to post up a lot of pictures, you know, and as we were getting through like day one, day two, day three. We hung out with Uriah Faber. Like, I got to the point where I'm like, yeah, I want you to win now, Uriah. You know what I
right.
mean? Like, I'm a huge Burrell fan, but all of a sudden I'm like pulling for Uriah, you know? Coolest dude, you know? We were cutting weight with him. I mean, just There was one point, I think it was like on Thursday or something like that, I forgot what, where they put everybody in one big room. And, I mean, you've got Alistair Arlovski, guys, Anthony Johnson, guys who are not even, well, now he's in
now
the UFC.
He is.
But
Johnson
guys
is,
that,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there was so many. And then Frank Mir comes up to Kevin. He's like, hey, are you Kevin Lee? And Kevin's like, yeah. He goes, well, hey, I'm Frank. And Kevin's like, yeah, you've been fighting since I was born. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff, you know? It was just a really, really, it was surreal, no doubt. But just like the whole process, like even there was moments there where I was in shock. I'm like, wow. And they have more people. So back in 2010, when I, you know, cornered like George Sotiropoulos and some other guys, things got done in a different way. And I don't mean good or bad. It's just like now the company's so big. There's so many employees. So you have to go through so many like channels and this and that. I mean, stuff gets done. I mean, they had great shuttle services to Whole Foods and every 2 hours to the sauna room. And, you know, because it was so packed of Super Bowl weekend. So we had to stay at the airport Marriott at Newark, which is really nothing around there. You know,
No. There's nothing around
there's
there.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
So, and man, Jersey, I thought New York was expensive. Jersey's just as expensive, man. Oh, my God, really? But, look, dude, bottom line, you know, it was a great fight for Kevin. Joe Silva, everyone loved his performance. The kid was really, you know, down and out. You know, obviously he was kind of disappointed. I got two cool stories. At the end of the night, so he went to go because, you know, he had a poke in the eye or something like that. So he had to go and get medically checked out at the hospital, and then he came back. So at the end of the night, and we had our manager, by the way, his name is Stefan Patry with Spartan Sports Agency. Dude, Stefan is the best manager I have ever worked with. Oh,
awesome.
My God. This guy, he takes care of you like you're his own child. Like, he made sure he took Kevin to the hospital. He got everything checked out. I mean, this guy went above and beyond. I've seen a lot of managers do work, and he was awesome. But anyway, so at the end of the night, we got all our gear, we got everything, and we're leaving. And, you know, we're going through the Prudential Center or whatever it's called.
The catacombs, yeah.
Yeah. And you get to the, you know, like this long hallway, the door that separates from you to the parking lot. And there was like a group of people there, and everybody left except for this one person. And as we got closer, I'm looking, and I'm like, you know, take a wild guess who was sitting there waiting for Kevin.
That would be Dana White.
Nope.
No?
John Jones.
Really?
Wow.
John Jones was right there waiting. Literally got off. You know, he was on his phone. He saw us coming, gets off his phone, told these people to leave, puts his arm around Kevin, and just gave him like the best speech. I mean, I was like,
I
a lot of people think he's like the most fakest guy out there, man. He said the most genuine concerned words, and you know, and Kevin still had his head down. He just kind of like, he didn't even lift his head up. He was like, all right, man, thanks. And just, and I mean, like the way Jones did that, I was like, you know what, man, you know, awesome. Thanks, John. I really appreciate that.
Well, I think some of that comes, and we'll get into the main card here in a second, sure. I promise. Some of that comes from when you see a 21-year-old set foot in the octagon and get knocked on his ass the way that Kevin did. I will tell you that 99.8% of every other fighter that would have been in that position, that fight was over.
Yeah. Yeah, and he came back.
And he came back and nearly finished that fight in the second round, rode his back the entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a dude that you want in that organization. And I think every fighter, guys like Frank Mir and certainly guys like John Jones, will look at that fight and go, yep, we need you on the roster.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. And you know what? Matt Serra and Ray Longo, those two guys are the most hilarious dudes I have ever met, man.
And I know that, like,
they need their own reality show.
I was saying,
they do.
My God. If you listen to a lot of podcasts for MMA, everybody screams for them to have their own show.
If you want, like, the MMA Odd Couple, you know what I mean? Like, you want to revisit that whole thing, those two dudes, oh my God. And I was trying not to, like, not like them too much because, you know, we're fine. But, man, you can't help. These guys. If you like that East Coast Jersey humor, oh my God, they've got it down, man. They've got it down.
And the rest of the prelim card was average at best, if not a complete sleeper. I think after Kevin, it was really, there wasn't a lot to watch. The Alan Patrick fight and Mac Desi fight was, a just awful lead in to what ended up
being. Dude, you know what? Sorry, I'm not trying to laugh, but you know what happened? I watched the fight, right? And, you know, when it went to the judges, that's when I turned and I was looking at whatever.
Right.
I forgot whatever. And then, you know, their fight was over. They walked in. I didn't bother listening to the judges because I thought John won.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was like, whatever. No. Check it out. So for us, right, comes by. And I had no idea. I went up there and I shook his hand. I was like, hey, man, congratulations, you know? And he just kind of looks at me and he was like, you know, those judges, da da da. I was like, yeah, it is kind of weird. And then I look over at John and then I look over at my manager. I'm like, Kevin's manager. And I go, why does he look like he lost the fight? I mean, I know he's probably not happy with his performance, but, you know, right. Dude, he looks like he just lost the fight. And he goes, he did. And I go, oh, don't I feel like a jerk over here saying congratulations, you know?
That's funny. So yeah, that I mean, that was your lead in, and of course Trujillo tries to get everything back on track with that brilliant stoppage of Jamie Varner. I mean, that was look, I said it Saturday night, I will say it here publicly, that is not a great technical fight. Like, you know, nobody's gonna write home and go, that's how you should fight in the UFC. But if you want to see two guys who just let's see what happens till somebody falls down, that was as close as you get to somebody, two guys agreeing verbally almost that we're going to stand in the corner here, and when one of us falls down, this thing's going to be over.
Well, and it's not safe to say, like, if you want super bonus checks, that's the way to do it, too. That, you know, don't go that route.
No.
Because that's a very scary way of getting $125,000.
Well, especially when you're fighting a guy like Varner who's never been stopped like that.
Oh,
you know,
he dropped.
And he was lights out. But Trujillo puts himself, not only did he win $125,000, but puts himself on the map. People want to see that guy. That's a dude that you're going to see in that prelim slot probably to get people to buy a pay-per-view because they know he's going to go in there and try and finish. But after that, guys, I mean, I don't know. I didn't see a lot that I was even really excited about. I mean, you see Overeem outstrikes Mir, what was it, 139-5?
Yeah.
139-5.
Yeah, that up knee is what started it all, huh? That little weird clinch, and then he threw that up knee and it hit Mir in the jaw, nose, face, whatever, and then
139-5.
And then what Joe Rogan said about that knee was hilarious. He said, that's going to make him forget his childhood memories.
Yeah. Because, you know, when you're back there, you don't get to hear all that stuff.
Right.
And then I watched the next day, I got a chance to catch up.
So Overeem, of course, plays it safe.
Okay.
He wins the decision, which I think I would have lost my house had you asked me to bet on this fight. I would have never bet that Alistair goes to decision.
His cardio looked good, right?
His cardio looked good. He played
it smart,
safe.
Very economical, all that good stuff.
But then he calls out your best friend in Brock Lesnar.
You mean Ken's best friend.
You know, which even for somebody who understands what's going on in the UFC, that just seemed like a really, really odd thing to do.
No, it's not, because that's just such a great paycheck.
It's a great paycheck,
paycheck.
I'm telling you this, and you can say what you want, and you can come over the board and fight me, whatever you want to do.
I'll show you one arm rear naked choke.
That Alistair Overeem might actually lose to Brock Lesnar, if you're going to play that safe.
Yeah, he was criticized.
Yeah, if you're going to play that, and I'm not going to beat you up for that. If he's playing it safe,
if that's the fight you're going to do against Brock Lesnar, you might lose that one.
Yeah, because, you know, like, go for the killer instinct, man. You know what I mean?
Especially when the score is 139-5. Like, 100.
He had him hurt in that. Then again, in the third round, he could have finished, you know?
Yeah, so there was that one, which I think everyone thought was going to rescue the card, because you've got Bogatinov and Lanker, who Lanker has said he's not going to go up to 135. I don't even know why they don't
cut
it.
Are you talking about Lineker?
Lineker, sorry.
Okay. I don't know how to say his name. But.
So, I mean, misses weight again.
Dude, check this out, man. He was
misses
on,
weight
no, no,
again.
No. He was on weight. Okay, so what happens on Friday on weigh-ins, guys? Burt Watson, you have to come down like at 9 in the morning. He has to check your weight. First of all, they check your weight when you get there. They want to make sure.
Like the day of?
As soon as we showed up, they're like, Kevin, get on the scale. We're like, oh, you might be mad. He's like, well, we'll see, you know. And then on Friday morning, you know, they check it. Well, they, you know, and the scale, the official scale that they weigh you in, you have access to that scale 24/7, guys. So there should be no reason why anyone's missing weight. And that Lineker was 127.5 when he at Friday at 9 in the morning, and weigh-in started at 4 p.m. And then when he got on the scale, he only lost a half a pound from 9 in the morning. If you just float, if you don't eat anything, and you just float because your body's peaking and all that nonsense, from 9 in the morning to 4 p.m., you'll lose a pound at least, definitely a half a pound for sure.
Okay, but like,
and he didn't.
So are you saying
he ate? Oh, of course, dude. Come on, really?
Okay, Right. So
he definitely ate.
Yeah. So like I'm sitting here watching this thing on Friday going, okay, of course you miss weight again, you idiot. And then you get to fight and of course you get outworked. Like,
what did Rogan say about him making actual 125 for a title? He was saying something, right?
He said not to do it, and that's what everyone on Twitter said. If you win this fight, you would obviously be in line for a title shot, but if you're the UFC, you're scared to death. If you don't know this, and Ariel Helwani tweeted it on Saturday night, and I think maybe Luke Thomas did as well, and if you don't know this, this is the facts. If you're in a title fight and you don't make weight, it's a non-title fight. Like, yeah. There is no question.
Travis Luter at Anderson
Silva. It's a non-title fight.
Ruins the card.
And I don't think you get an hour to make the weight.
You gotta come
point
in
zero. Yep. That's it.
There isn't the 5 pounds, right, 5.5 swing, and you, yeah, all of that stuff. And he just can't be trusted to do that.
Yeah. Well, he came up short on the decision too, right?
So, right. But yeah. I mean, even so, he's a guy that I think you either walk up to him, and if you've got a good manager like you were talking about, you say, you're going to 135 or you're leaving the UFC. Talk about it with your manager.
Yep.
Give me an answer in an hour, because we're not going to do this again. We get to Aldo and Lamas, and I don't disagree with Dana White, because I was talking.
What did he say?
Well, so I was talking on Saturday night. If Aldo wins this thing, I'm pretty sure I'm going to put him at number one pound for pound, because I think he's deserved it. Except, as Dana White said, you've got a guy who never goes for he doesn't have the killer instinct. He just racks up the score to the third round and then takes a nap for 10 minutes and walks away with his belt. We're talking about this Aldo Pettis thing like it's a reality. Earlier in the week, it wasn't, because there was a talk of a catch weight. Dana has since fixed that, because Aldo's camp, and rightly so, was worried about not being treated like a champion if they go up to a different weight class. And Dana said, nope, it'll be champion versus champion. You will have to vacate the belt, all of that stuff. But it's going to be champion versus champion, super fight 155. You will get exactly whatever that means. Is that pay-per-view? Whatever the bonus structure is, you'll get the same thing. You'll be treated like a champ, blah, 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 blah. But Anthony Pettis is not a dude that you can rack the score up against and then wait for 10 minutes for you to get your belt.
No, I mean, the first four rounds was brilliant. Oh, my God, some of the best Aldo we've seen. And then round five is just like takes a nap, you know. So, and we know what Anthony Pettis can do in round five.
Jose Aldo didn't do what he needed to appeal to the casual fan either. He didn't make a big name for himself. It was a pretty slow fight. I wasn't that interested in it. So to call this a super fight with Pettis, can we even do that?
You know, I don't know. To be honest with you, and I know this is I'm totally changing subjects here, but those Brazilians need to learn English, man. I'm being honest with you, man.
To make that jump, sure.
Dude, you know how much money they're missing out on? Well, these guys could do so. They just learn. Look, when Anderson learned a little bit of English, look how much more fans you collect, man.
And I don't think this is a knock. I don't really even take that as any sort of criticism. I think it's just the facts. When you're on Fox Sports, you need to be able to thank people for coming.
Yeah, man.
And you need to be able to say Sean Desai was a great opponent, but I was better tonight, and that's why I have the belt.
Just do it.
Whatever.
Because, like, you know, we saw him throughout the week, and being around him felt like you just left a funeral. It was like, dude, I don't want to hang around you no more, dude.
You text me and said it looked like he was having a bad cut.
Oh, my God,
like,
bro. Yeah. I was like, you're not fun to be around. I don't even, you know. You hang out with Faber and Jamie Varner, and forget about, you know, cultures and countries. I mean, they're just in a good mood.
But Varner and Faber aren't dropping from 230 pounds down to 145.
Whatever the case is, man, maybe 55 would be a good fight. And to back up to what you were saying, Joe, yeah, I wouldn't call it a super fight. I would just call it the lightweight.
But don't you
championship?
You
fight.
Can certainly make this into a super fight. People are going to buy.
You can sell it as one.
You still
champ
have
versus
you
champ. Blah,
you
blah,
still
blah.
Have the video of him double knee knockout. Yeah. Knockout of Cub Swanson.
Yeah,
you know, you've got all of those things. You've got him tearing apart Hominick till the fifth round.
I would say
don't show that part.
I would say I could see the fight happening if the negotiations go, say, okay, if we do lose to Pettis, we get that guaranteed title shot back at 45, like right away. And I'm sure they would.
I'm sure
that would not be
I'm
an
sure
issue
that's
because
in there.
He's finished both of those guys that are going to be if he vacates. Mendez and Swanson.
Swanson.
Right.
Yeah, he's beat both. He's finished both of those guys,
right.
actually. So,
right.
I mean, I think those
that would be a great fight. I'd look forward more to that than the Pettis versus.
Well, and
slow down, Joe.
I don't know that I would agree with you, but it would inject some life into that because your issue right now.
Use that as the co-main event.
Your issue right now at 45. Well, you should because then they can make weight and fight a different whatever. Your issue right now is you've got a dominant champion who's now just looks like he's bored. You know, he puts on these brilliant performances, but brilliant in a very strategic way. Like, he's not putting on a show when we, I mean, Lamas wanted out of there in round two. I mean, he was hurt and backing up and didn't want to get punched and hadn't, I mean, more power to him for staying in there for five rounds, but at no point did it look like he was comfortable. He kept coming and kept fighting because I think after the second round, when he had taken the bulk of the damage, he kind of just went, well, this is what my body's going to feel like, so let me just turn that light switch off and go in the I'm going to fight for another 15 minutes, and here we go. Yeah.
And I mean, I know it's very, very hard to do, but if he could have done what he did in round five, obviously, it would have been different. But, you know, good job on him from coming back really strong for round five.
And then the main event is one, I think Dana White's quote said, 169 was a catastrophe with a cherry on top. Well, this is your cherry on
top.
That's
the cherry,
As Henan Barral keeps his belt in a very weird fashion in that he gets on top of Uriah Faber after hurting him, clearly. And make no bones about what I'm about to say. Henan Barral is going to finish this fight, and he was going to finish it in the first round. But he gets on top and essentially taps Uriah Faber in the head and just tells Herb Dean, hey, this fight's over, in case you were wondering. And Herb Dean goes, okay,
I want to
go home.
With you.
I've been here for 13 hours. I want to go home,
you know,
too.
There's two sides, obviously.
Oh, no, there's not.
Well, you got to look at it from two points of view. And one is, yes, Faber was hurt. He was rocked. He got, you know, that one time where he fell flat on his face. It was bad, you know what I mean? And, you know, safety first, we all know that. And Herb Dean was like, you know, yeah, you gave the thumbs up, whatever. But I think it's safe to say that Faber wasn't going to be coming back from that shot.
No, okay? And I'm not disagreeing with you.
Right.
I'm saying a couple things. One, it doesn't really help Barral because he didn't really win definitively.
Right, right.
And it leaves it open for a trilogy, which really nobody should have to see.
But the thing was, is like, I do agree with, I think what Faber said, like, this is a title fight. This is the main event. Wait till my body goes limp or something,
yes,
and then stop.
I don't disagree with that either.
So that's what I'm saying.
The one thing I will say, and you would be able to discredit that, this statement, if I'm not right, is that when there's the fighters meeting, I'm sure they tell you something like, lying on your hands and knees grabbing their leg is not intelligently defending yourself. Yeah. And so if you're going to intelligently defend yourself, move.
Yep.
And so if you're not going to move, it's a title fight. I don't disagree with that statement. Let it go a little bit longer.
Sure.
I mean, you did let Frank Mir get punched in the head 140 times to five. So, I mean, there is that.
Yeah.
But Faber has been in this forever. He has never lost a fight that doesn't involve a belt.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who knows that you can't lie in a prone position like that and wait for something to evolve. You've got to evolve it yourself.
Yeah, and no one can blame the ref, you know.
He couldn't. There's no way he could see that.
And Uriah Faber even said, you know, hey, I'm not mad at Herb Dean. You know, he's the best in the business. So it has nothing to do with the ref.
Sean, correct me if I'm wrong. In the position he was in, the turtle position, is there only a limited amount of damage he could take from there? So was he not taking a defensive position to recover?
The only thing, like I said, it wasn't Herb Dean's fault, but I couldn't really hear because where I was at and the video I was watching, I couldn't, you know, hear anything. But I'm pretty sure, you know, maybe you guys can correct me on here. Herb Dean probably said, come on, move, do something, show me something. When a ref says show me something about three times, the fight's going to get stopped. That position is you're not going to get knocked out in that position. It is defensive, but it's not enough. So
he asked to show him something, and he thought he was showing Herb Dean by putting his thumb up, right?
Yes, but I mean, if
putting a thumb up is what you should do when you're getting choked. When you're getting punched, putting a thumb up is not the right thing to do. If you're getting a guillotine or rear naked choke, and your eyes are squinting, and the ref's like, "You good?" You know, and if you can do that without letting go of the hand, you know, if you can do that, that's fine. Or if it's like a heel hook or whatever. But when you're getting hit in the head, putting the thumbs up is Chris Lieben, you could hit him 1,000 times. He'll probably put 2 thumbs up at the same time. You know what I mean?
And I just really think, Joe, I know what you're trying to say here. I just really think when you're in that position, that's not a position that in this sport you should hang out there.
Nope.
Like, you need to start advancing that to something else.
Sure. And, he was trying to recover, but it might not have been the best position to recover in.
And Burrell should have thrown, like, instead of those little hammer strikes, he should have thrown, like, knees to the body or, like, the back elbow to the head.
Yep, Travis Brown, more,
like, significant blows where, like, Herb Dean's like, okay, yeah, dude, you weren't doing it. No. He was killing you.
This is totally
yeah.
over. All right, when we come back, because, obviously, Sean, not in the best of moods, we're going to play Sean's favorite game this week in GSP. Is back next. So
wait, why is GSP always back?
I don't know, because he's the Brock Lesnar of MMA.
This guy over here, huh?
It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Desay from Triumph MMA. Joe is in with all the statistics from UFC 169 and anything else that we need on the week that not only we wrap up UFC 169, but it is rumored that George Zimmerman will be fighting this guy right here in a celebrity boxing match on March 1st. So I don't know who, when you talk about good managers, I don't know who the manager of George Zimmerman is, but fighting DMX in a celebrity boxing match is not a really good idea. It's a terrible, terrible idea. So
no matter who wins, they're both losers.
Everybody loses, including us. So as promised, it is another week. And, of course, with another
week, we
get Sean's favorite thing we do on the show.
I'm not a dad.
Well, wrong one. Sorry. Oh, try this one.
This week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in your head, man?
Let me tell you something, NHK.
This week in George St. Pierre.
Week, how do you guys not like that?
This week,
in, you guys should all be laughing and smiling. Dude.
George St. Pierre, there was an interesting conversation that manifested itself on Twitter, where an MMA journalist, a boxing journalist, was able to talk to Freddie Roach and had some very interesting things to say. One of which was that for the past 2 years, apparently George has been getting migraines and wanted to take a 2-year hiatus and was talked out of it by Freddie Roach into taking only a single year hiatus. So that leaves the door open to perhaps this rumored Anderson fight. I don't really know, but some of the stuff that Freddie was saying, he was again criticizing the UFC and criticizing Dana White. Dana White has come out later on in the week and been like, I don't get what's going on here. We made this guy rich. He seemed fine when he was here. Now that he's not here, all he does is run around and give interviews via Freddie Roach or whoever to rip on the UFC. And some of that, I think, guys, is certainly posturing because as Sean and I talked about when the quote-unquote retirement happened, that's a bug that's really hard to shake.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know that we've gone. I mean, you said it in the last segment. I don't know that we've gone a week without talking about George St. Pierre. And for somebody who's not actually fighting, that's a big statement, especially when we can compare that to somebody who's actually retired, like Randy Couture, who I haven't mentioned in a year. That's an actual retirement. I have not had. There's no this week in Randy Couture because
there is no.
There's nothing going on unless there's an Expendables movie, and then I would talk about him. But
I think it's interesting that this is coming from Freddie Roach. So I'm completely speculating, but I bet that GSP talks to Freddie in what he thinks is confidence, and Freddie's just such a straight shooter. If you ask him, he doesn't have a filter. He's just answering reporters' questions, and that's how this was. These details came to light.
Which is certainly possible, but it also, to me, opens up another couple of questions. One is, if you have a fighter that's suffering from migraines for 24 straight months, where is the doctor that's intervening and going, we're giving you a whole lot of Vicodin and aspirin and Advil or whatever to control these migraines. Maybe a career of being punched in the head we should probably back off from.
Yeah.
Dana White came out and said that. So when GSP walked away, he met with Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta.
George did.
Yes.
Okay.
And he told him why he was walking away, and there were personal reasons. The personal reasons did not include headaches or having anything to do with drug testing. So Dana White says, I don't know why he's bringing up all these things now, because that is not why he told us, and he did tell us why he walked away.
And so this, I don't know what to do with all of this stuff because it's all really weird. I'm not a guy on this show or off of this show that wants anyone to go pry and figure out what this personal reason is. You have a personal reason?
Sure.
Cool. Bounce.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Cool,
but
dude.
I don't want to hear from you. you know, the drug testing is the drug testing. I'm a guy who's like, if I wake up on Monday and Overeem tested clean at 169, I'm going to be pleasantly surprised.
You know what was weird, man?
Pleasantly surprised.
You know, 169, you know, Kevin had to go through the screening before and after, and I think almost everybody else. So I was, I'm a little bit, that's why I'm not really jumping in on this conversation, because I'm like really confused with a lot of these, like a lot of the things that GSP is talking
about.
Yeah,
but even if, let's pretend there isn't a personal reason for a second and say that it's headaches and drug testing, right?
Okay.
You are the number one pay-per-view draw, the champion in your weight division,
right?
The highest grossing person with endorsements within the sport who isn't named Dana White or a Fertitta.
Okay.
You may or may not have some power to, I don't know, start shifting the conversation. If you really thought that this was an actual issue, you could be a pioneer. In the same way that whatever you think about Matt Hughes, I know some people have really strong opinions about him, but as a professional, what Matt is doing with this fighter protocol, he is making a change in the industry to make sure that the fighters have a decorum, a universal decorum, so that you know what to expect when you're an employee of the UFC, contracted or otherwise, right? So he saw an issue and went, we got all these guys with Twitter accounts and Facebooks and YouTubes, and they're all out doing whatever the hell they're doing. Let's put a piece of paper together and say, if you're a contracted employee for the length of your fights, these are the things you can't do. And if you do them, there are repercussions. And then, as you've seen, you haven't really seen a whole lot, save for the Mitrione thing, whatever, 8-10 months ago. There isn't a nonstop barrage of crazy tweets that you're getting. Yeah. I mean, Matt Brown, the notable exception with his topless female MMA fighting comment.
When do those tickets go on sale?
Right, exactly. Right. But if you're George, if this was even a thing, why didn't you do anything about it when you had a chance to do it? But now that you're on the outside and you're, according to Dana, changing your tune, why are you changing your tune?
You know, to be honest with you, you know, I think when you first go into the UFC and you're working your way up until you get to title contention and then, you know, you actually win the belt, I think the early phases, you know, you probably don't have any complaints. And then towards the end, obviously more money, more problems, you know. And I think a lot of things were bothering him, and he just probably felt like he couldn't say anything because he was under the radar. Now that he's out, you know, he can do whatever. You know, maybe he's just, you know, maybe he's using some sort of outlet to get a lot of frustration out of his system. Who knows? Because you can't fight. And if you can't fight, you get stirred up, man.
Yeah. Well, right. And, but I guess. OK, so this is kind of my point, Sean. Yeah. My perception of George prior to the last couple weeks is much different than my perception of George right now. And by that, I mean, if you had these issues and you couldn't say them till you were on the outside, why can't you just say them to the people that can make a difference?
That, yeah, like your boss.
You're not saying them to them. You're saying them to Freddie Roach, who says it to a random dude on Twitter.
Just pick up the phone, man. I'm telling you guys, listen, the UFC, you can get a hold of anybody you want. If you want to call Dana,
This is my point.
From a beginner, first fight in, debuter, Kevin Lee, if you wanted to get a hold of Dana White, here's the number.
Okay, but let's pretend that's awesome. Let's pretend that's not true. You cannot look me in the eye and tell me that George can't call Dana White. You just can't tell me that.
You know they got like the Xbox FaceTime or whatever.
They're playing on Xbox One.
Is that what it's called?
They're the same clan and Clash of Clans together, you know, whatever.
You're losing me, E. Slow down. Slow down, bro. Are you talking about Game of Thrones right now?
Not quite Game of Thrones. Okay. But so I don't know what's to come of this, but it doesn't seem like it's stopping anytime soon. Next week we'll have another crazy thing. But again, the things that stand out for me, guys, are it's not George talking. It's George talking through some sort of a medium, be it Freddie Roach or Firas Sahabi or somebody.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to have any sort of action item. What is Dana White supposed to do with these complaints from Freddie Roach?
She's like, okay, thank you, whatever. When does Captain America 2 come out?
Right, when is the Leaper coming?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm kind of, you know, how big is his role in that? Is it
pretty
small?
Big.
Is it big?
Yeah, he's one of the villains.
Well, yeah, I don't see him in any of the previews.
That's probably why, you know, what they make the previews out of, right?
Garbage.
The best part of the movie. Perhaps he's not part of the best parts of the movie. I'm just saying.
Have you already seen the movie?
No, I have not seen the movie, but I...
You look like you're grinning from ear to ear like a little kid, man.
I'm grinning because all I can keep imagining in my head is him showing up on screen and facing off with Captain America and going, I'm not impressed with your performance. That's why I'm grinning.
All right, okay, what you got over there?
Also this week, Jessica I. This story got pretty. She's one of the female fighters in the UFC. She was popped for what was it called? A prohibited drug after a fight against Sarah Kaufman at 66. There was moments this week where she was not going to be able to compete at UFC 170. That has since been cleared up somehow. She's still on probation, and perhaps Joe can shed some light on how this all works. She's still on probation, but able to fight. And
she was on drugs.
The rumor
She denied it at first.
The rumor earlier in the week that it was going to be marijuana or some sort of derivative of marijuana. Right. But Bleacher Report was reporting that it's some sort of blood thinner that she has to take based on a car accident she had when she was a teenager, but still a prohibited drug that you can't be on when you fight. And if it's a blood thinner, I can only imagine why they wouldn't want you on that.
A blood thinner and going into a UFC fight. Oh, man, that is like the worst thing you can do to your body.
Sure, but that seems to have a little, and she has not come out and said what it is, nor has the UFC. All the UFC has said is they have worked it out,
okay,
and she's going to be able to fight at 170. But to me, it seems much more likely that it would be this blood thinner thing as opposed to marijuana, because the blood thinner is something that is not performance enhancing, right, but outlawed for obvious reasons.
Sure.
And something you could fix. Like, she'll sit out the probation. She won't fight in Texas or whatever, but we need her to do this thing. We'll make sure she's not on the blood thinner at 170.
And Joe, is she within the limits of the marijuana? Like,
right, yeah. I don't know. I didn't.
Why are you guys?
Because I don't know that it was marijuana. I love that you leaped to the
fact. Oh, like, oh.
That was the report early.
Oh, okay.
Now it's.
The reason why that's probably not sticking to her name is because she was within the limits of her usage of marijuana.
Wow, okay. And the views on this show by Sean
Am I making this up?
Are not necessarily.
Am I making it? Did Nevada State Athletics say, yeah,
no,
you
did,
can go
but
to.
You're not listening to me. That was the rumor early when people didn't actually know what it was. Now they think it's blood thinners. It's not blood thinners and pot. That's not. They're not together.
It's just pot
it's,
now.
No. Oh, okay. Jessica I fighting at UFC 170. We have talked about
Mile High Stadium.
We've talked about Nurmagomedov and him not having an opponent. We've been pulling for Michael Johnson. That is not going to happen. It's going to be Rafael Dos Anjos is going to get the card, which I think is a great outlet for Nurmagomedov because I think he'll swim by.
When's the last time Dos Anjos fought?
Joe will figure it out.
2 years ago?
I think it feels like a long time,
yeah,
right? It feels like a long time, but I think this is a great test for him because after this, we were talking in between segments, after this, I don't know how you stop him from not being in title contention.
I say throw him right at Benson Henderson, man. Just put him right in there. Just throw him at Benson.
What would that do to Benson, though?
Who cares?
Because I mean,
make Benson go to 170.
No. I'm telling you right now. I mean, we talked about this, but he didn't look very great against Josh Thompson.
Exactly.
And yeah. You know, Nurmagomedov is not.
And didn't
Josh
he
Thompson.
Win? Yeah, he beat Josh. Yeah. 100%. Give him Benson.
He beat Josh.
I guarantee you that won't be a decision.
Josh
fight
retired.
Right there,
yeah. No. There. There's no decision.
Yeah.
There.
So Dos Anjos is on a five fight win streak. Last beating Donald Cerrone August 28th of 2013. So he might put up a fight there, guys.
What?
I don't know.
He
dude.
Beat Cerrone.
Yeah.
What? Am I thinking of the right guy?
I don't know if you are. I know exactly what I'm thinking of, but I still think. You really think?
Well, I mean, he's on a 5-fight win streak. I had him count out.
Who are the five? Give me the five.
Donald Cerrone, Evan Dunham, Mark Bocek, Anthony something.
See, those are so spread out.
The last
those are
two,
so.
I don't know.
So his 5-fight win streak has been over the past 5 years, probably like one
since
win
May of 2012. So that's a couple years. Yeah,
Bocek and Dunham.
Dude, he's really shut me down.
But I mean, thing you say, Sean. Is
you know,
wrong.
Bocek and Dunham, decent fighters. Obviously, Cerrone, a marquee fighter.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't. The UFC not rewarding him for that marquee win.
How did he beat Cerrone?
Decision.
Yeah, Nurmagomedov's going to win this one. I'm
yeah,
telling you right
dude.
Now. I am telling you right now. That's what I'm telling you.
Hey, Joe, you know what he's saying right now?
No, what is he saying? I didn't catch it.
I wish Ken was here. Okay, when we come back, we'll break down what is left in news, catch you all up to date, and we, of course, have two events next week, and then the week after, we'll talk about a little UFC Nations and a lot more. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans, Sean Dezay, and Joe Huck covering everything on Twitter and Facebook. Some ridiculously crazy news coming out of Florida as Thiago Silva involved in a story that's really, quite honestly, hard to believe. He was arrested via SWAT team and is currently being held on 4 counts of attempted murder, 2 of them with a weapon. And as best as I can make of the story, this is what happened. I believe it was a week or two ago, in January 30th, he showed up at his soon-to-be ex-wife's residence, and they got into an argument. And at one point, she went to go scream, and Thiago Silva had a handgun and put the handgun in her mouth and told her that he was going to blanking kill her. He leaves. She goes to the police, gets a restraining order, and then February 5th, again calls the police to say that Thiago Silva was inside the house. He didn't want to leave, told her that his wife had to leave. He ends up leaving eventually. Then February 7th at 7:44 p.m., Thiago Silva allegedly parks his Dodge Charger outside the Popovich Mixed Martial Arts Academy, where his wife, Thaisa, was training with Pablo Popovich, who is, of course, the leader of that jiu-jitsu school. He, being Thiago Silva, starts honking his horn and waiting for her to come out to talk to him. When Thaisa comes out to talk to him, he is completely intoxicated and then brandishes a Glock pistol and says, "You have, quote, 10 seconds to bring Pablo outside, and if he does not come out, I will go into the gym and start shooting everyone inside." So Popovich exits the gym, goes to the driver's side. Thiago points the firearm at his wife. Some more death threats ensue. They both run back into the gym and call the police. And then officers arrive at Thiago Silva's residence, identify themselves, and then Thiago gave them the middle finger, and they had to call in SWAT. He was taken into custody at 11:12 p.m., and he is, like I said, sitting in jail right now on a number of counts, on aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, domestic violence of some sort, and assault with the attempted murder, I believe, is the one that may not stick. That's the one that they're debating as it will stick or not stick. As should come to no shock to you, a story like that, it took the UFC most of today being Friday to get to the bottom of it and then consequently cut him. He was going to fight on March 15th. He is no longer in the UFC, and according to Dana White, will, quote, never fight in the UFC ever again. We will end with a little bit happier news, as Ronda Rousey took one and then another new movie project. She is going to be in the movie adaptation of the show Entourage, and she also joins the Athena Project as the star for those. So she does get booed in the UFC, but she is undoubtedly a star in the universe, and people are excited to be a part of that. Dana White tweeted last night, being Thursday night, that it couldn't happen to a nicer person. So exciting news for Ronda Rousey, as outside the octagon, she has 2 starring roles in 2 different movies that will both do very well. So congrats to her, and we end on a high note. You need anything over the weekend? Twitter and Facebook, just search WOW Show and find us on Stitcher and iTunes anytime you need anything from us. Have a great weekend. We will see you next week.
Way of the Warrior.